friends. Chris Sauter, lead pastor at Neighborhood Church. We work hard at creating content every week that is life-giving and inspiring for people to live a full life. So we're inviting people who find this stream to be life-giving and encouraging to consider becoming a sustaining member at Neighborhood Church. That could be a one-time gift or to subscribe monthly. And you can do that at neighborhoodchurchmn.org. Thank you, friends, and enjoy the message. Our goal in this is a place to process. And I've asked, and the panel's going to introduce himself a little bit. But our goal is that we can hear people's experiences, what happened. And we have a different group of people. They all come from different backgrounds, different places, different thoughts. And I really value that. But our goal is not to pile on. Like, you're going to hear things that you're going to be like, yeah, someone knows me. And you're going to hear other things that people, you're like, they don't know me at all. And why would they say that? And our goal is not to pile on a political figure. Our goal is not to pile on one way of thinking. You're going to hear probably multiple different voices. And I'd say all of it belongs. We are like, we are a white church, predominantly white church. And we are probably more progressive and probably more leaning liberal. I think that'd be a fair assessment of our church. But one thing that we've talked as a council, one thing we've talked as an advisory board, is that how do we still include different voices than just our own? If the majority is, of course, white, how do we include people of color's voices and opinions and their view of the divine and what justice and life looks like? But also, like, how do we get other people's experiences of even a more conservative view? Because I think that it absolutely belongs and it absolutely needs to be heard. And there's something we can all learn to hear different people's thoughts and opinions. So
can I speak to that?
Yeah, totally. Well,
I think it can be easy to find voices that sound like yours and you become like an echo chamber of your own ideas. I am guilty of that. It feels really good to hear people soothe you, right?
Yeah,
and so it's not bad to be soothed, but if we live there, then we don't grow and nothing changes. And so I would encourage you to listen for understanding. This is just a part of growing in communication is instead of listening to come up with a retort or rebuttal, we listen to understand another person. Works really great in a marriage, right? Works really great in any kind. Because my spouse is right here, right? But in any kind of relationship, there's something about going into that conversation, listening to understand, not listening to respond. And that is our goal today, is especially between the five of us here on cameras, to listen to understand. That doesn't mean that we agree or that our minds have to be changed. But there's something about being present with another person in that communion of listening to understand, so that we can still break bread together and worship together.
Yeah. So one thing that we do every week that I want to do before we introduce the panel is called the prayer of generosity. And I find it incredibly grounding and life-giving, because this is who we are. And not just like, we won't be lying. And most churches say, like, we won't be generous people as a way of like, hey, you should continue to give and tithes and offerings and money. And, you know, that's all positive, big fan of that. But like, the value of being generous is that we're going to be generous with our grace. We're going to be generous with our love. We're going to be generous with our understanding. We're going to be generous with our lives, with our experiences, everything. And the reason is because this is who God is. This is a Jesus way of viewing life, is to be generous. Because when Jesus says, love our enemies as we love ourselves, that is incredibly costly kind of love. That is a very generous kind of way. But to be generous in love your enemies, doesn't mean then you give a free pass for anyone to do what they want. Jesus would speak truth to power, right? But would still create space, would still invite them to come participate in that same kind of love, to participate in that way of being. So we can speak truth to power and we can still love. Does that make sense? And I think it's so important. That is how we move. That is who we are, that we can be incredibly generous. I'm going to read this mm-hmm. prayer that my wife is handing me. I wrote this down, I bolded it because I knew I'd forget it. In this kind of love, is what we want to do is we want to wait for our enemy. We want to wait for the person who's different from us, or we even want to wait for the person that we love. We want them to get there first before we extend that love. I'm saying, oh, you agree with me, or now you want to be humble, or now you want to talk. Oh, suddenly now I want to give love. What the Christ does is that we extend that love always. That's what it means to be generous. We don't wait for the other person to catch up. We don't wait for the person to initiate. This is just who we are always. So I'm going to read our generosity prayer. This is in our program if you'd like to yell it out like metal version screamo, if you want to do it with me.
Or if you want to listen gently.
I like mine better. Godliness with contentment is great gain. We bring nothing into this world and we take nothing out of it. We who call Jesus Lord devote ourselves to resisting greed, which plunges the human heart into ruin and pierces it with many griefs. We are determined to practice generosity with free hearts, fixing our hope on God, not the uncertainty of wealth. We desire to be rich in good deeds and willing to share all that we have, laying up for ourselves treasure that will not decay, but will shine in the age to come. Amen. All right. So we are now going to introduce our panel, and we are going to start with our friend, Diana. Diana, would you unmute yourself?
Good morning. I'm just really grateful for this community, and I'm grateful for a chance to talk. And my name is Diana, and I just want to tell you that where I come from, because I think it matters that we find ourselves, we know where we sit in the conversation, because it'll tell us what we can see oftentimes. So I am a soldier who is turned peacemaker. I always say that my country taught me to wage war, but Jesus taught me how to wage peace. And that is what I'm for. I think everybody belongs at the table. And I'm also a white mom raising a Black son in America. And so when we talk about these things, it's not an idea for me. I desperately want the world to get better for my son's childhood and for all of our children's future. I also come from a law enforcement family. And so these are just all the intersections of where I sit when I tell you what I see or what I hope for when we talk about the insurrection at the Capitol. On to you, Mike.
Thank you, Diana. Thank you, Sodders, for having me here today. Where I come from, so I do agree with Diana. That's really important to set the stage of the conversation, especially when we're talking on a topic like this. It's really important to understand where each individual comes from, the biases that I carry into a conversation, and just the lens that I see the world through. So I am Native Mexican. Where do I go with that? I guess throughout my life, I've grown up pretty privileged in white spaces. And it's only been until recent years, I would say, that I've really started to dive into what it means to be a person of color in this country. And it's been a whirlwind. It's been a crazy ride of understanding and figuring out what that means. So I have been doing social work for the last 4 years, and then another 4 years before that, just working with people after getting my degree in psychology. And so I would say I work with primarily Native American families, so I see the disparity every day that I work, and I've really been looking a lot into that. So but I would also say that I do come from a place of privilege. I haven't been in poverty my whole life. I haven't had a lot of experiences that other friends or people of color that I'm close with, or just that are have experienced. So that's another lens that I see the world through, is kind of a Christian background, privileged background, and kind of trying to figure out the world where I'm at now. So thank you. On to you, Victor.
Hi, everyone. So again, thank you for the Sodders for this invitation. So just a bit about, I think, you know, in the lens of where I'm coming from, I think I'm coming from the perspective of, I grew up in a very different culture. I grew up in Singapore I spent my all my years, the first 20 something years in Singapore, in a different culture, in a very different political system, a different way of governance. And then coming here, you know, obviously when I was in Singapore, I wasn't considered a minority, but then coming here now, you know, being considered a person of color. Also from the perspective of, you know, right now I'm teaching engineering at UMD. So coming from that lens of the academia, and I think for me, it's, I grew up in a very conservative family, very conservative home. And my pretty much most of my life has been that. While I have started to look a little differently and start to maybe disagree with some of that, there's a lot of it that still, I'd say, pervades my life and I still hold close to, and I still have a lot of people who are very near and dear to me who are very conservative, and they mean a lot to me. And so, you know, a lot of my thoughts and the way I operate still has that influence in my life, that and I don't necessarily, you know, like for me, it's not necessarily that it's wrong or anything. It's just, you know, a different perspective, I guess. So I guess that's kind of the lens that I'll be coming from.
Awesome.
Excellent. Thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah.
I am Nikki Sauter, and I've grown up in northern Minnesota my entire life, and so I've never lived outside of this area. I am a white woman, and I've grown up in the evangelical church and then spent most of my life as either a lay leader or as a pastor in a evangelical church. And so my framework comes a lot from there. I'm also raising three kids in this area, and I get to work with my husband.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So that I would say that my lens is, I have stayed in the same place my entire life. And so that has skewed a lot of how I've seen the world. But one of the things that I am learning is that there's like a cycle that I go through as a white woman when there is a problem that arises.
Can I just?
Oh, you need to talk too. So before I go into that, why don't you share who you are?
I don't feel like I'm talking enough, but as the white male here. I feel like I should be talking more. So can we just?
But I think it's good for you to say.
Yeah. Right? I'm Chris. I was also raised. You know what? People don't know this. I was raised Catholic. Then I went to a hyper Pentecostal church, like push you down, yell at the devil. Okay. Then I went evangelical. And then I worked for a Lutheran camp. Then I went to a hyper Pentecostal college. Yeah, all that. So I'm really special.
You've got some experience there, Chris.
But what I wanted to say is that we asked everyone to come on to kind of answer several questions, and it's going to go a lot of different places. The first one is, and this is where I think you were going, yeah, but is the question is, what is something that you observed or noticed that got highlighted maybe through what happened at the Capitol on Wednesday that brought up some feelings or things you'd like to share? So like, what have you noticed maybe has always been there, but has never had a voice to it?
Okay. I think for me, there are those phrases, and those of you who read the email that I sent out to the church are aware of this, but if you hadn't, there are some phrases that pop up at times. This isn't my America. This isn't my Jesus. This isn't my Christianity. And I have used those phrases before. I have benefited as a white woman using those phrases. And I think it was just this last cycle of seeing something intense happening and then watching my activator, like wanting to do and to fix and to solve, that it wasn't until I like wrote that email like three times, I realized my work is to own my own issue here. Like, I really want to point my finger at, well, the problem is over there. It's not me. Like, I'm not, don't anybody tell me I'm a bad person. I'm like, that's the problem. So when we say phrases like that, or when I say, not when we, but when I say a phrase like that, what it ends up doing is it distances me from having to engage in any kind of discussion or having to own anything personally. Cause I can just say, well, I didn't hurt anybody. I'm not a bad person, but it disengages my heart. It keeps me from having to repent or move from anything. And it's kind of like, I can take you were talking about this a little bit. It's like, I can use my whiteness as like, I can put it on as a cloak to hide and take it off and use my privilege whenever I choose to use it. And that was alarming to me. And it's one of the things that for me, my next step is to own that, is to say that is happening. And instead of trying to pass it off to somebody else, I need to say I'm actively a part of that problem. My thing to own is that I need to see that there is hurt. I need to see that. And that starts in me. So instead of saying, this isn't my America, I want to change that question to, this is America. I am a part of it. And am I viewing it in any other way other than just through my lens? Yeah. And when it comes to, and then when it comes to, is this my Jesus or my Christianity? What are the things that I saw that aren't a picture of the Jesus that I, as a pastor, want to lead my church into, or the Christianity that I want to lead our community into? Instead of reflecting and saying, that's not my Jesus or that's not my Christianity, what am I seeing that's not matching the goals of who we see Jesus to be or this community to be?
Or what if we, all right, because we can only own our own selves. What have we been doing as friends, as parents, as professionals, we're professionals, as pastors, that has added to people being able to say, oh, not my Jesus, oh, not my USA. Because I think for me, something I noticed is so easy, and it's really easy because even the Capitol and people are complaining or whatever. And they're like, oh, we're victims. Don't you see their pain? You don't understand the pain that they have. And I'm like, oh, funny how you can now call yourself a victim because in the last 4 weeks you believed in conspiracy theories or whatever it might be. And I'm like, oh, I've been able to do that. Anytime I lose a perception of power, I feel like, oh, something's being stolen from me. Something's being taken from me. The power's always going to be there for me as a white man. But we get really insecure when we feel like there's this idea of this loss of power or loss of voice or a loss of being able to do whatever it is that we want. We all of a sudden can just pick up that victim jacket, put it on and say, oh, look at me. And then we can look at other legitimate victims and it takes away from their voice and from their lived experience. Yeah.
So I would love to hear from someone else, like for those of you on the panel, what did you notice? What was the question again? What did you notice
or observe?
And observe.
And anyone who wants to go first, just unmute yourself.
Go for it.
I can take it. As you guys were thinking, or when we had brought this question up with me, it took a while till I had an answer to this, because I think as a person of color that has really embraced that for years, it's difficult because when situations like this happen, I just find myself in a whole bunch of different emotions. I find myself confused. I find myself sad. And I think what I really noticed with this week was just how much that can overtake my thought process, and that I'm not going to have a clear answer. And I don't always know exactly where I stand on a certain situation, not the situation as a whole, but different arguments that people are having. Because I think the difficulty that, again, I really came to understand was, how do I stand up for myself, for those that I care about, for what's right? How at the same time do I do that trying to be a Jesus looking person, like balancing, okay, how would Jesus handle this? What does, and so when you start doing that, I think for me, I started realizing that I guess I do have kind of some of that privilege that you had talked about, Nikki. So just looking inwards, I'm like, oh man, I don't really have to explore this deeper if I don't want to. I can kind of just step back. I can kind of step back into the shadows and be quiet if I want to. And the point being that just being uncomfortable with all this uncertainty. And when I noticed that about myself, it's like, Mike, that you're right there, you're perpetuating the problem. If you're starting to feel uncomfortable and you just kind of step back into the shadows, you're not doing anything about this. And yes, I am a person of color, so it does affect me as far as, and maybe I'll get into that at a different question or just maybe a little bit later. But that was just my initial response was, what did I notice about myself is that I noticed that even as a person of color, it's like I do have a level of privilege that I thought that I could maybe just step back and not face any of this. Because I started to feel like if I push into this, what is this going to cost me? And I started coming up with all of these things. Man, some people might really disagree with me, or I might lose some friends, or people might start calling me out within my job or within my friendships. And I started getting all these worries, or what if I don't have the right answer? You know, what's my family going to think about me? What's this person going to think about me? And then I started to feel anger, and it's like, okay, well, if I push into that, are there going to be places that maybe I'm not wrong, or that I'm going to start to speak out against people when I don't want to, and I'm going to act out of emotion, I'm going to act out of anger. And so these were just all things that if I push into, that's really scary. So I'm just going to step back. And the last thing being, if I push into this, where am I going to find that maybe some of the thoughts and values and things that I believe, or the way that I would respond, are not right? So as I push in, and I'm like, okay, I really want to explore this, I want to dive in deeper, start having conversations with people, start, you know, evaluating my own biases, it's like, oh, that's uncomfortable, because I might have some people that are like, Mike, I'm sorry, but that's not correct, the way that you're thinking, or the way that you're talking about that person or this group of people, that's not Jesus looking, or that's just not wise or kind, or just any, in any regard, right? And it's like, no, I'm valid. No, I'm a person of color, so I get to say that. It's like, yeah, but, and so that's where what I really noticed. Again, I've said that like three times, but it's like just that I had some privilege to want to step back, but also realizing as I push in, it's like, man, that sucks. And that doesn't feel good, but we have to do it, right? Because that is the problem, is just pulling back and not having these discussions. Because as you push in, that allows you to grow and be better.
Thanks, Mike. All right. Victor, do you have anything you'd like to share? I said I wasn't going to do that.
So just as a kind of a recap of the questions that Chris sent us, just kind of want to read it in the context of what we are saying. It's, you know, the questions are, what do you see in that event on Wednesday that often goes unnoticed or unreported? And what opportunities do we have as Jesus looking people? So as I was thinking about that question, I think it has been helpful hearing everyone talk about looking inwards, looking at ourselves, and like, you know, what our responses have been, because I find myself, as I was preparing this question, like looking outwards, looking the other way around. You know, for me, it's about thinking about, you know, who are those people and how do we react, and what, to me, what often goes unnoticed and unreported, as I think about not just these riots, but also back in the summer, is the law enforcement. And it was interesting to hear that, Diana, you came from a background of law enforcement people, because, you know, right away, I think they have been vilified a lot. And we tend to say, like, you're doing too much, you're doing not enough. Like in this case, like it was like, you guys were not doing enough, right? You know, people stepped down. But I don't think we have necessarily heard from people who were there themselves and what they actually felt, you know, when you're dealing with an angry mob coming at you with guns and everything like that, or just people yelling in your face. I just want to share a quick story that I've encountered with law enforcement. And this was right after the George Floyd incidents in the summer. So things were, you know, emotions were still high. And I remembered I was just sitting in my car at an intersection in Duluth, and all, you know, there was this black man that just crossed the road. He was kind of running, brisk running across the road right in front of me. And then, you know, the light was still red, and all of a sudden this cop car just came screeching to a halt in the intersection. Cop runs out, tackles the guy to the ground, pulls out his taser. And, you know, and the black man was just on the ground saying, I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything. And this was just right outside my window. And the car behind me, I could see that person with the camera and everything. You know, eventually the black man got up and grabbed his backpack and ran away. And that was all it was. That was all I saw. And then the cop was giving chase, right? This white male was giving chase. So in the light of everything that was happening, that was kind of shocking. It was kind of a shocking thing to see. Because that's all you hear about, right? It's like people react, the police are reacting in this way that seemed wrong, that seemed a little violent. And I remember I texted a few friends, hey, this is what I saw, this is kind of shocking. And all of them were like, I can't believe it's still happening. So, you know, that evening, some of my friends were like, hey, write to your city council. And so I did. this was about 7 p.m. Right away, I got some responses. Right away, they forwarded my email to the department, the police department. And right away, I got a response from the chief of police. I don't know if they still call him the chief, but, you know, the chief of police. They looked into it right away. They told me that, you know, it was actually the state patrol. So it wasn't them. They eventually were called to help hunt down the guy. But it was the state patrol. And next morning, like 9 a.m., I got a call from the state police, the chief of the police there, just trying to explain the situation to me. And I think through that, I mean, eventually, obviously, he explained to me, like, you know, that person crashed a car. He was trying to run away from the scene. He had drug paraphernalia and things like that. And I think what was important there was, I think as I was talking to that guy, like, you could hear how, I think, the difficult position that they are in right now. And, you know, the whole time he was trying to, like, you know, none of us agree with what happened in Minneapolis. But right now, like, the perception of who we are as law enforcement is just not, like, we're just not popular with the public. Like, everyone tends to look through us through a certain lens. And I could just hear that, you know, it's not like despondency, but like kind of a discouragement. It's like, we are doing something, you know, we are looking at this, we are trying to change, we're looking at the ways that people are getting trained and things like that. But there's just a public perception on them that's just really hard on them. And so I think from what I see, like, being what is being unreported, that's what I see for that question, which is, I think there's a group of people that we tend to almost assume that, hey, this is your job. You need to do your job right. And what doing the job right means exerting the right amount of reaction, just the right amount, you know, not too much, not too little. And I don't think we necessarily hear that perspective from them of, like, how, you know, what are they actually feeling when they're actually there? And so, you know, as, so maybe I'll just answer the second question later, but I just, that's my perspective on the first question, although Diana just kind of left, so.
It's okay. Victor, thank you for sharing. I really appreciate that.
Diana's back.
Oh, there's Dee. All right, Diana, do you want to share anything about what you've noticed from the events on Wednesday? You have to unmute yourself, though. Oh, never mind. All right, we'll wait for Diana. One thing, Diana, just give me the finger. Give me the thumbs up. Don't give me the finger. You can as well. We're very open-minded people here. But I think one of the things I noticed, and Nikki said to it earlier, is how we really all want to belong. And we can get caught up in the echo chamber. Even like what Victor said, we can just make a meaning of something we've experienced or something we saw. And it could even be true, right? But then to only look through that lens can be dangerous. Of like, I know that my circle of friends, we think very similar. We think a lot alike. And it does feel good to have someone scratch your back, say, yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right too. And I think the opportunity for us is to listen to other people's stories, to hear and try getting like a bigger picture of what's really going on. And I think, like, even with all the conspiracy theories, oh, there's Jake as well. So I'll wrap it up then so you can talk. One thing that I've noticed is how easy it is for people to only go to sources that confirm their own bias.
And so let's let her talk.
God bless the internet, friends. I'm just going to be real honest with you. It is really hard being a mom of a Black boy in America. And what all parents want to do is keep their kids safe. That's like the bare minimum of parenting. And I go to bed at night scared because I know that, like, Tamir Rice's mom and Trevon's mom and Michael Brown's mom, like Eric Gardner's mom, Breonna Taylor's mom, like, we can't keep our kids safe because there is this double standard of violence against Black and Brown people. And because I have a background being in the military and in a war, I know, true story, I know that there is a code of honor and a conduct, and there are rules when you wear a uniform, whether it's a soldier's uniform or it's a police officer's uniform. And we have seen people do break those laws. And it seems like a really hard thing to tell somebody who we see as a public servant, hold them accountable when they do something wrong. But if we don't, then we have given away our trust and our integrity. And there's no soldier I know and no police officer I know who will ever want a criminal to hide behind the honor of their uniform. And so that's why we call this out again and again. And this is just a story that I share because I think people need to understand that we have choices when we choose violence. And so I was part of a battalion of 500 people who were deployed to the Iraq War. So this is a war, 500 of us. And so we're in the middle of a war where people have guns, where there's a language barrier, there's a cultural barrier. And in that 397 days we were there, we did not kill a single civilian in middle of a war zone. We were scared. There were threats, real threats, including all the other things that are happening in a war. And so I know that I know that I know that you can be scared and you can refuse to shoot somebody. I know that because I've been there. And so one of the hardest things watching the Capitol insurrection was all the things of watching law enforcement not do their job, because these people in some way, shape, or form were their people. And for all the moms raising Black boys and Black children, and I cannot speak for the Black community because I'm a white woman, I did not bear their trauma, their wisdom growing up in a racist America, but to watch that gutted me. Just gutted me. And so if you're watching this and you're white like me, I just need to tell you that we have a different experience. And so when you see a headline, it's not the same, because ours is day in and day out. How do you navigate this racism that falls on a little human being in my home? And how do we heal that? And how do we change it in our schools and our friends and our family? And so from my perspective, at the watching law enforcement, not even one of their own was being pummeled to death in front of them and nobody fired a shot. Like, that wasn't lethal. Like, it was so hard to see that. And it's scary to see that. And I don't know how, all I know is that I need to say that that is a pain and bear witness to that. And that is a fear that other people don't know. If you aren't scared that your kids aren't going to make it, because we have this unjust system, that violence for one isn't the same, then we need to keep changing that. And as a peacemaker, I think that we all, like, this is a we situation, and especially with racism and police bias and violence, we need to start to see ourselves in it, and we need to start taking responsibility for this. Because if you were over 56 years old, then you were part of segregated America. If you were raised by somebody, you were raised by somebody who was part of an America that believed in segregation, because 1964 was a Civil Rights Act where Martin Luther King asked for segregation to be outlawed. That's really, really recent, and we're still here. And I think more and more, if we can take responsibility and if we're going to start to do better by our kids, we're going to have to start owning this stuff. And we're going to have to say that those people at the Capitol, like, there's a we in this situation. Like, I don't get to vote them off the island. I have to say, this is part of my country and this is my work to do. And this conversation is part of it. I ask people who are listening, like, one, find yourself in the story, and your opinion depends on where you sit and the skin that you have in the game. I know that is part of where you start, and then you have to start owning this stuff. we as a country own this. And the second thing, because like Victor said, there was actual questions that Chris gave us. One was, what do you think isn't being seen? And so I think one of the things that was a game changer for me was when I started to see my own violence. I couldn't really see it because I was part of the good guys in the good country. And so when I invaded Iraq, it was a coup. We took over their government. In Baghdad, it's called the Green Zone. Wherever the seat of government is, you come in and you take over that. And that means you effectively have taken their country. So I know what that is, but until I really saw my own violence in the war and saw who was affected by it, and does that look like Jesus? I couldn't even see it. Like I had no idea that perhaps I wasn't always doing the right thing for all the right reasons, and my country wasn't always in the right. But when you see that, it changes you. And so I do think that we need to accept that what happened at the Capitol, that was not a riot and that was not a protest. And I'll give you three reasons why. Because when a coup is an illegal takeover of a country's government. So because it was at the Capitol, that's our seat of government. So the place matters. It wasn't just any old place. It was at our government's capital, which is why it's guarded the way it's guarded. And the second thing is the timing. It was certifying an election. So that was to disrupt a democratic election, which is significant. So that's why I think that we can't just look at other countries and say, well, they have coups and they have people trying to take over their democratic elections. Like, in humility, we have to admit that that happened here too. And the US we have done over 70 coups. So as a soldier, I know what this looks like and we're good at it. And I think it's important to accept that it doesn't happen just other places. There's not an us and a them. Like, this indeed was a coup. It was an illegal takeover of our seat of government. And it was successful because they actually got in and they actually were there for 4 hours. Thankful that after 4 hours they took it back, but it was successful. For those 4 hours, our seat of government was taken over, and our lawmakers, if any of them would have been taken or killed, that election wouldn't have been certified and we wouldn't have the government that we have right now. So that was a little bit, a lot. I will kick that back to anybody else who wants to ask questions or move on, but I'm grateful that this is a brave space. I'm not asking anyone to agree with me. I'm just asking you to include my experience as a mother of a black boy and someone who wants peace and believes that Jesus followers have a place at the table to do some incredible good.
Yeah. Thanks, Diana. That is excellent. And I'll just add that if anyone wants to ask more questions, the process, I know on the Facebook comments, there's people saying, I have some questions that will all be answered. Not answered, that'll all be discussed and processed on the follow-up, which you can get the link to that Zoom call in the comments or on our webpage at neighborhoodchurchmn.org. Victor or Mike, do you have anything that you want to?
Is there a second question? Since everybody answered.
And actually, Nikki, I was gonna respond to Diana and kind of answer the second half of that question if that works. Yeah, Diana, I love the way that you put that. And actually, I was a little nervous to speak my mind on this. I think that's just because my perspective and what I will share right now is difficult to do in white space. I know that the listeners are predominantly white that are listening right now, even around my close friends. If it's a predominantly white space, I'm just uncomfortable as a person of color sharing my experiences, saying, here's the way that I feel. Because historically, that's been like, no, that's not true. That's not valid. My thoughts and my feelings as a person of color, if I bring up race at all, it, for most of my life, has been invalidated, right? Like, no, that's fake. You're not feeling that. That's not really what I meant. So what I do want to share is that on that day, I just felt completely defeated, just like you, just gutted, like, because it was a smack to the face of reality. It's like back when George Floyd was murdered, and this was all over the media, and it was just across the country, it was like, okay, is this real? Like, man, this can't be real, right? It was just like, it was this almost like dreamlike state, like, man, people can't be this hateful. And again, I had just ignored it. And so that's where I have to take that on my shoulders. I'm like, for most of my life, I had kind of bought into white fragility or white culture, saying like, it's really not that bad, right? It's no, because I was just pushing it away, so I wouldn't have to deal with that. So when George Floyd was murdered, that was kind of a smack, like, oh man, it really is. But oh, maybe not. Maybe it's not as bad as I think. But then when I saw what happened at the Capitol, it was just like, I mean, I couldn't, as a person of color, I couldn't think of a more validating thing to white fragility, to white supremacy, to white culture. It's because it's right in front of you. It's like, look at the difference in responses. This is, and I'm sitting there and I can't even, I can't comprehend it. It's like, how is this? They'll know this is fake. Like, this is a TV show. How is this happening like this and nothing is happening, right? When I saw peaceful protests to somebody that was murdered and things went way different. So that was another thing. So two things that I have for that is, and it's, how can we respond as Jesus looking people? But it's also, how will I respond? And then kind of just a challenge for those that are listening is, one thing that I think of, if I were following in Jesus's footsteps, which I am, and where we're at right now, I think there's a huge call just to understand and learn more, as everybody has said here, to listen to other people's stories. But I would take it further than that. I honestly, especially now that it's like, it's been heavily politicized, now that politics are heavily involved too, I would just encourage people that are listening to listen to people's stories, hear that there are people of color hurting. There are people, marginalized people, that are hurting, right? And so when we look at it, it's like, why is that, right? And so I think that there's just a huge responsibility as followers of Jesus, as people that live in this country, to really start to dive into how is our country made up? Like, what is the history of our country? Like, really diving in to say, like, where has systemic racism really become? Like, how is it a real thing? I'm kind of stumbling over because there's so many thoughts that I have with this, but my encouragement is to just continue to research and learn more. Because I think as I've done that for myself, as I've really looked at the makeup of this country, that's when I'm like, oh man, there is a real problem. And I'm a person of color, right? So it's like, you would think, oh, I just know this. And I don't, because that's how hidden this is. And that's how it just dictates everything that we do. So as I started to research more, just even the way that we function, it's just like, wow, it is right in my face. But then I would say the same thing about, Chris does this week to week, is I would say the same thing goes with just our exploration of Christ and the Bible and our own faith on where can we dive into that more? Where can we study the Bible more? Where can we study what Jesus would have for us more? Where can we study cultural context and translation? And because I just think we have that responsibility to understand Jesus better, to understand our own government better, to understand our own people, because that's what he ultimately calls us to do, to love ourselves, to love him, and to love one another, right? So I don't know, I could go on for this forever, but for the sake of time, I'll kind of digress. But again, that's what I see for myself. Is as a Jesus looking person, what can I do? I can continue to look inward and say, where do I need to change so I can love others more? And where can I connect with the divine more? Even as a person of color, like, how can I connect to people that are hateful, that are white, that are oppressing me? How can I connect? How can I, and that's such a tough thing to do, because it's so hard for me to even say that, but how can I do that, right? And then how also, during all of this, can I not say, no, I'm right because I believe in God? It's like, how can I pour into that even further? It's just an opportunity all around 2020. I've talked to everybody about this. 2020, moving into 2021, is just such a great time to just flip the script and say, how can I look inward on everything that's happening and examine myself to be a more Jesus-looking person and just a better friend, brother, cousin, neighbor, all of that. So thanks.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate that. All right, Victor, do you have anything you'd like to say about the opportunities moving forward or anything?
Yeah, I think I just want to add to that. I think I think in terms of the opportunities, I think I tend to see this situation more from a political lens. And I understand that race is a huge, it ties in a lot. But from a political lens, you know, as you think about what Mike and Diana have said, I think, you know, maybe for me, I always think like, what does it mean to love somebody who has a totally different viewpoint from me? I think it has become so polarized that, like what Chris was saying, you know, we just surround ourselves with people who agree with us and scratch our backs. And, you know, so we are all just sitting there and yeah, you know, this is happening. This is wrong. This is what we should do. We are not hearing the other perspective and they are not hearing our perspective. And I tend to wonder, like, you know, the people who were there on Wednesday at the Capitol, like, would there have been a difference if some people among us were their friends and they actually heard some of our perspectives? Would that have changed what they thought? You know, thinking from a political lens for me is, you know, I have a really good friend who was really, when the election results were all done, and he was really hurt, right? He was really upset, like anybody would. Like, you know, you feel strongly about voting for one person and they lost. And, you know, it was all doom and gloom for him. You know, he made some very inappropriate posts on Facebook, but that allowed me to kind of text him back and just call him and talk to him about it. You know, he knows where I stand, and we don't necessarily agree. But just giving a perspective of, no, it's not doom and gloom. It's like, you know, it's not. It's emotions are high. So I think the problem is that we need to have that relationship with those people, not just like, yeah, I tolerate you. You know, maybe you have relatives who are like that, right? I tolerate you. But without a relationship with these people, like, how do you actually have a conversation to say like, hey, here's my perspective. I know that you have a different perspective. Here's my perspective. And so I think my question is like, you know, opportunities as, let me rephrase it. Opportunities do we have as Jesus looking people is, how do we engage the people who are on the opposite side of us? And not just engage in the sense of, I tolerate you, but how do you have a relationship with them so that when things like that come up, I can have a proper conversation with you. I can give you what I think. I can hear what you think. And from there, I think hopefully when you hear what I say, it triggers something about what you're thinking and makes you think more about that. But that requires a lot of trust and relationship that I think maybe some of us are not willing to engage because it's hard to try to talk to somebody who is completely against something that we hold very dear to. No, so.
Wow. Yep. Okay. Thanks, Victor, for going right at my heart. Appreciate that.
What stood out to you?
Just the idea of like everything. And Diana, I want to hear what you have to say. We're not wrapping up. But that whole idea of like tolerating, it's way easier to tolerate people and then call that understanding and call that, I'm even doing you a favor by listening to you right now. And I'm just gonna give you a nice smile and nod instead of going the step further, which is to really include.
Yeah, instead of canceling. We do a lot of canceling. So you guys hear a lot from us. I'd love to hear from Diana. Yes. So go for it, Dee.
I just love what Victor said and Mike. And the question of what's the opportunity for Jesus followers? And I love this one because it's the game changer, because I think the opportunity for Jesus followers is to lay down our violence. And violence is not just, it's not guns, it's not just bombs, it's in our words and our deeds and how we talk about who deserves things and who's disposable. And I just challenge you there, like every time Jesus saw violence, he interrupted it. He refused it. And I think if we, like, I'm not asking anybody to like set aside all the things that you feel really, really are very important to you. I'm just saying maybe take a week, maybe a month, maybe a year, and just decide that you are going to put other people first, and you're going to show up with them. And you're going to, like, that's kind of the thing that that I decided. I was like, man, Jesus points specifically to some people first. He says the oppressed, the marginalized, the hungry, the incarcerated, those who are having violence done against them. And so I just decided, I was like, man, I can't say that I love people if I don't actually know their name. And so I just started showing up. And as I started showing up with people in our community, the unsheltered community, and started showing up at Black Lives Matter and started showing up for the LGBT community, I was like, oh, I had no idea that this is what life is like for you. And I had no idea what you are scared about for your kids. So my challenge is that you put other people first, and specifically those who are experiencing violence. Like, violence will show us where we need to start doing our peacemaking. And Jesus was the Prince of Peace. And it's gonna be hard to show up with somebody else and let your faith be a blank check instead of something that segregates us to who do we, that depends on our agreement. Are they voting like I do? Are they living life like I do? Do they look like me? Do they care about what I care about? So I think the opportunity here is to start to show up personally with these communities, not just the ones that you disagree with, but the ones that are actually hurting. And I truly, truly believe that, like, if you start to notice where the violence is and go to that place and listen and learn and start to make their concerns your concerns, you're going to look more like Jesus. And I think the world is desperate to see anybody who's willing to lay down their violence, lay down their right to be first. That has given me hope. That has given me a place to stand again and again, because it's not going to change. And Martin Luther King, he did it. He just said, he's like, the time is now, our cause is just. And he just did this stuff. He didn't ask people to join him. He didn't have another dialogue. He knew that he knew that he knew that segregation hurts us. And I think violence hurts us as much as the people that we're doing it to. So I think make a decision this week to show up somewhere and start to listen and start to learn, and then just keep doing it. Let it be part of your life. So that when these things happen, you already know someone from that community who's affected that you can say, how are you doing? Just make your faith a blank check instead of something that separates you, because it is going to do good and it is going to invite people. And you don't have to worry about canceling people. Just do the good stuff, because people are drawn to good and beautiful things now more than ever. So thank you so much for letting me share a little bit.
Diana, I love that. And I just have a one little thought to that. It's somebody asked me this week, where do you find, it was part of an icebreaker, but they're like, where do you find hope in all this despair? And I love what you were just talking about, because it made me think of it again. Is I find hope that when there is, when we're at such a time of unrest, that this is when you really see, like, good pushing back, right? And you really see people stepping up. And I love that you're inviting people into that to really, I've just seen it more now than ever. So it's just a thought that I had. So thanks for sharing that. It gives me a little bit more hope today.
All right. So Nikki has one last question for our panel.
Yeah. Before we take communion together, I'd love to know from everyone, all of you, Victor and Mike and Diana, and then from the two of us, what did you learn today? Or what is your takeaway from this conversation?
Victor, why don't you go first? Victor just wiped his hands and he's like, oh no. Just briefly,
I know there's a lot, but if you could take your nuggets of truth that you're going home with, love to hear it.
I think it was interesting to hear all the different perspectives, and it was very helpful. I think, by the way, for everyone, like, Diana and Mike and I literally just met. Like, we didn't, like, discuss, right? We didn't, like, hey, we're on a panel, let's kind of talk about it. Like, so I didn't know what they were going to say, and they didn't know what I was going to say. So it was just kind of like this thing. But I think it was very important to hear, like, their perspectives and putting it in the context of their background when they introduced themselves. I think it was very helpful, because me coming from what I was thinking about, and then now hearing, like, where Diana is coming from and where Mike is coming from, and hearing And when they share, it's like, oh, this makes sense because this is what was important. This is what's important to them based on their experiences and who they are. And these are things that I would not have thought about because I don't have that same experience and I don't have that same background. And so I think that was very helpful for me.
Thanks, Victor.
Yeah, thanks, Victor. How about you, Mike? What's a quick takeaway?
Yeah, my quick takeaway would be that listening to other perspectives and pushing in and just educating yourself more, there's nothing, like, there's no downside to that, right? Like Victor was just saying, we all just heard each other's perspectives for the first time. Like, obviously, I've known you for years, Diana, but Victor, I haven't known you. And Diana, you and I haven't maybe talked about this, but it just feels so good to hear other perspectives, even if it's not 100% what you believe. It just restores my faith a little bit more in people, like to say, hey, these are good, well-intentioned people, smart people. So having those conversations, diving in deep, educating yourself more, finding out more is not a threat. It's a threat to your own comfortability and in the life that you're living. But I would, we need to break from that. Because again, that's white culture is just let me do my thing. And I have to have it on this straight path. And if anything disrupts that, it's all chaos. It's like, no, like that is chaos just staying in on your one path. So inviting other people in, hearing other perspectives, having these conversations is always beneficial and always just shares more of the love. So that's my quick takeaway.
Thanks, Mike.
I'm glad Victor said it. We literally all just met. my takeaway and the thing that I think is more clear and my hopeful thing is that people are more than their opinions and their politics and their positions. And so when we get together, healthy communities, people first. And so I'm so grateful that we got to be here together and we can see each other. So I think that people, we are the ones who have created an America that is hurting. And that also means that we, the people, can be the healers. So I just want to hold those two things and continue to put people first because I think Jesus put people first. And continue to have, this has been really great that we can talk about this. I think that's something else I'm really grateful for, to be seen and to be heard. That is a healing thing. So thank you.
Thanks, Diana.
What's your takeaway?
My takeaway, I still rolling around in my brain, the story that Victor shared about what he observed and then his action he took afterwards. I tend to see that and then just stay angry. So what I learned is, there is some movement. And then even the response you got back, Victor, you heard from the sheriff's department and you heard from the police department, that changed something for me. That changed my lens a bit of how I see. Also, Diana, you're talking about wearing a uniform and what that kind of honor and respect means has changed. Because I had some feelings about people in uniform. And so I feel like my thought has softened, so it's not so harsh. And that I see that it's not as black and white, that there's more gray to that scenario. So I feel like even having a discussion like this helps me to see the humanity in people. So yeah. How about you?
My takeaway is that I am, like all that, I am so thankful that we are a part of a community. And really, I mean, we're a part of a church that can talk about this stuff on a Sunday. There, like several years ago, I would have been so intimidated about getting emails or losing people or talking about white fragility or any of that. It just would incite people to be angry. And then I would just kind of like back down. And even before I was told, like, don't tell anyone what you really believe. Like, I'm so thankful that we be a part of a church and a community where we can just really be honest. The threat of who we really are, I mean, the idea of who we really are is not a threat to the belonging. So I'm thankful for the panel. I'm thankful for all the people that have, I mean, there's so many comments on our Facebook
feed. What's your favorite way to share some of that?
Well, I know a way you can share some of that. You can come to the follow-up. Good transition, honey. Go to the follow-up.
But before that, we need to take communion together. Oh, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
Let's wrap
it
up.
I was listening to respond. I wasn't listening to understand.
It's 11 o'clock. We got to be done. All right, let's do communion. This is water. Not tequila, just so everyone knows.
Okay.
It looks just as clear liquid. I've never had water for communion before.
You can have anything. Because the whole part is that with communion is that we're recognizing Jesus' body and his blood and his sacrifice for us, and that we are taking in God's good life. So I think even after this table, our Zoom table that we all came to, there's something about breaking bread, taking something sustenance in. So in the same way that we took in from each other, that we digested, that we're digesting new thoughts and ideas, that we're also removing some, maybe some prejudice we had or some bias just in conversation, that we're taking in something good. And so mm-hmm. there's something even physical about whether you have your coffee this morning or your donut, but if you want to raise your glass, and we're going to take the water and we're going to take our bread and we're going to remember Jesus' body and blood and taking that in, that new life and new sustenance for us today.
Okay.
And then the same way we're going to take this
fruit roll up. Most holy.
We're taking that in. And I'm gonna pray, and then you're welcome to join us. We're gonna move off of this link, and then we'll go on to our Zoom link. But just join me as we pray. God, thank you for your creation. And we thank you for your design, and we see your life and your love. Would you expand our view of your creation, of what you put inside humanity? Would you help us in the places that we are afraid, that we'd walk in faith? Would you bring healing to the places that are hurting? And would you give us courage to take that next step that we often are afraid of? Because we see you in our neighbor. Expand our heart and our love. And thank you for your generosity with us. Bless my friends today that are watching and listening, and be with us on our journey as you have always been. We say amen.
Amen. Thank you, friends.
Thank you so much, Diana and Victor and Mike, for sharing. You guys can join us all at our next link. So we're going to discuss a little further. God bless you guys. Have a great Sunday.